Steve, as an owner who's been building a family atmosphere here, how difficult was it emotionally to let those players that you mentioned have been here since the beginning for you? And how do you balance the business from the personal?
Listen, I mean, yeah, I mean, you develop these relationships, and I felt what the fans felt, right? I mean, and the worst part was these players left, and yet we hadn't signed or figured out who was going to fill those positions. And I describe it as even I was feeling anxiety, right? Like, how are we going to get there? But David kept cautioning me and telling me that, you know, stay patient. That it's a long off season. I think, the off season doesn't end December. It ends, you know, even past, you know, today, right? I mean, potentially, right, for teams. And we stayed patient and disciplined, and I feel really good about what we accomplished.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, February the 23rd, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. And come join us at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Updates on the show, free chat, premium content, all at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Welcome to a snowy edition here of the Talking Mets Podcast. It's amazing. We have spring training games finally here. Baseball's back. We actually have results to talk about. And if you're somewhere in the tri-state area, you're probably buried around 2 feet of snow. Opening day, about a month away. And I saw a joke online where, somebody was basically saying, hey, do the Mets have to start the season in Port St. Lucie? It may be with the way things are going, but here we are. And this is a little bit of a different show. I'm basically doing a short State of the Union because as I was thinking about it, and the reason I come to you a day later with the weather and the threat of power outages and everything, I was kind of all encompassed with snow yesterday. And, you know, the game was on. I got to see some highlights. I really didn't engross myself in either of the first two games. I said to myself as I was looking at the content, and there is a point, and I think there is some interesting things I want you guys to mull over today, a couple of points. But I was looking at it. I said, this might be the toughest show weekend of the year. And you might say, how is that possible when all winter you have dead free agency? You have the dog days of summer where there's really not much to talk about, the roteness of the season. And I tell you, after a really robust 90-minute show a week ago, you basically were left with the first or the final days of workouts before the first spring games. Most of the spring games, or at least here with the Mets, the veterans are not playing. You're seeing a lot of 4A guys littered up and down the lineup at various points. I mean, look, nothing against JT Schwartz, who hit the big home run yesterday for the Mets, but a 25-year-old who was playing in the Eastern League last year and hit 205, hard to really talk about very much there. Now, there's the Mets in the weeds junkies here, and you know that, and they'll find anything to talk about. But with the first two spring games, and some of the feedback I even got on mailbags, which was light this week, was, hey, there's kind of not much going on here. It's true. And I was tired, and I wrote about this over at Extra Innings. I was tired of the whole, you know, Kodai Singh is throwing 97 miles per hour and watching Bo Bichette flub ground balls in practice and, you know, speculating about Polanco at first base. I mean, that's the banal part of spring training. And we'll hit the dog days of spring training too, which start to happen probably in about 3 weeks or so when you're really saying, hey, you're 2 weeks before the regular season. You're ready for this thing to matter. You're ready for some stuff to go on. But really, this might be the toughest week. And I sat down and I said, I could do a show like everybody else and just try to find things and grasp for straws. And again, I always say, I don't want to waste your time, especially on a radio show podcast, because, you know, when you read something, you could just click out of it, and you're done with it. But here, you're actually dedicating time, and I take that seriously. But there are a couple of things I think that are important to talk about. And during this, I guess, early spring State of the Union, we'll get into it. And I think the first thing is a commitment I think we need to make here together on this show. And I saw it this week happening, and I don't think it's going to last forever, but it is going to last for a while. And it's the, let's look at the ex-Mets and continue to rehash old stories, continue to pine for them, continue to get angry or speculate about why they're not here. Now, I guess when it's your job to create some sort of content, when you work for a major newspaper or a media outlet, it makes sense for you to drive to Sarasota to watch Pete Alonso hit a home run off of a minor leaguer in spring training, as if you've never seen Pete Alonso hit a home run, as if anybody suggested that Pete Alonso would leave the Mets and stop hitting home runs. That nobody said that. Or if you want to go and look at a video of Edwin Diaz throwing absolute nasty heat, which we know he's going to do, you could do that too. And if you want to be, and look, there's nothing, if the Athletic has every right on the Texas side to talk to Brandon Nimmo and speak about what happened in New York and all that other stuff, and that's a story to them, his leadership and his style of leadership, he brings that clubhouse with some of the young players, that's their thing now, that's their story, so that's not a bad thing. But if you want to, as a Mets fan, go over and poke into it and look at it and rehash Nimmo, so be it. I think the commitment we have to make here on February 23rd, I'm pushing forward here, look at that, is this is the end of any hot stove talk, even though it ended, once pitchers and catchers came, it ended. This is the end of any look back. The next time you want any of those three players to be part of the conversation is if they're playing the Mets. Now, granted, when Diaz comes to town and when Alonso comes to town later in the year, and at some point the Mets will go play Texas, Texas won't be coming to Citi Field, I believe, this year. They'll reinteract with Brandon Nimmo, and it will come up. And look, if Pete Alonso, like he did last year, has an MVP-type April, you're never going to hear the end of it. The media is going to play this one up because, look, it's easy clicks. But I don't think it's healthy for anybody who is following the Mets to continue to look backwards. It's only about looking forwards, and I am here to look forward. And the decision was made. Everybody knows, and I'll say this for the last time, if you've been listening to this show, especially if you've been listening since the last bell rang on the 2025 season and I laid out in October off-season priorities, you knew full well that Alonso and Diaz were what I wanted them to rebuild the team around going into 2026. It didn't happen. The Nimmo situation, I loved Brandon Nimmo. I admired how he, first draft pick under Sandy Alderson, no man's land where he played high school ball. He played Legion ball. He didn't play high school ball. Great attitude, great role model. Was pegged as a fourth outfielder, nearly traded in the Jay Bruce trade. Everybody forgets about that. Failed a physical or else he never would have been a great Met. He would have been a great Cincinnati Red. And maybe people would have wondered what if how the Mets traded a great prospect, top prospect, for at the time it was a rental. I know Jay Bruce came back, but you know, for a hot minute. And he did a lot here for the Mets, and he'll go down. And I think at some point, for sure, all three of these players down the road, a decade from now, will be in the Mets Hall of Fame. I don't think their numbers will be retired, but they'll be in the Mets Hall of Fame. Maybe Alonso, that's a conversation down the road. And maybe they'll go on to win championships in their new homes and obviously touch up their career numbers. Maybe Diaz and Alonso have some sort of Hall of Fame conversation at some point. I don't think so. Not in the Mike Silva handbook. But that's not for today's discussion. I think the commitment now is that's it. I brought it up. We talked about it. We are not going to rehash it. And even if the Mets are doing poorly this year, and if things completely blow up in David Stern's face, which I don't think that will happen, I'm not saying the season will go perfect, it's not about looking back, it's about looking forward. And if you read, and I'll get to it in a little bit, if you read the lockout rhetoric, which I know right now is rhetoric, you know, Tony Clark is out, Bruce Meyer is going to be taking over the negotiation, the owners are hell-bent on a salary cap, whatever. If you look at where the game is headed, from an economic and competitive balance, you might be happy that the Mets didn't bring those two big contracts back with and Nimmo with his extra years, because I think that, and I'll get to it in a little bit, I think that that could have been a problem at this point. So what do I want you to do now? I want you to put the book aside of the 2025 Mets and the Alonso highlights and the Diaz highlights and the Nimmo and the railing about Stearns. And I even saw something floating around on X from Reddit about a fan wanting Stearns to go on the Joe Benigno podcast and like take his lumps from Joe because he needs to respond to the everyman and he has a PR problem. The Mets have no PR problem. And you heard Steve Cohen speak earlier in the week. He was attached to these guys. He didn't want to see these guys go, but he made it clear. And I think this is the biggest learning out of Cohen's comments. Not the fact, and I'm not going to get too much into this captain stuff because, quite honestly, it doesn't mean a lot. I wrote about it over at Extra Innings. You can check it out over there. The captain situation, you don't need a C on your chest to be a captain. You go into that clubhouse, and whatever your role is, you contribute in a positive way. You maximize your role, your abilities, and be the best version of whatever that is of yourself at what that point in your career. But the biggest thing I think Cohen told you during that conversation was that this is Stearns' team. I liked Pete. I had a personal relationship with Brandon Nimmo. I never wanted them to leave. Read the Athletic article where Nimmo talked about how during the 4 or 5 days where he was thinking about waiving his no-trade clause, how Cohen spoke to him and told him how hard it is and how they had a personal relationship and how now he's got to step away and let his president of baseball operations make a decision. It begs the question as the owner, and I think this is where Stearns, and this is very important, I think this is where Stearns is so disassociated from the players and maybe the criticism from an Adam Ottavino where, hey, he doesn't communicate well. And that is a big deal. As an executive, you have to communicate well. But you also have to be cold, I think. Because if you start to like players as people, or you start to become a fan like you are, and like I am too, as much as I try to disassociate from fandom when I do this show to do a good show, the reason this show works is because of the passion and the history of me rooting for the team. Because if I was a guy who grew up in Chicago rooting for the Cubs and decided to start a Mets podcast because there was money to be made in it, it wouldn't hold the same weight. You would see the phoniness. I mean, a lot of these beat writers, they do really good jobs, and over the long haul, they become part of the fabric of the team. But make no mistake about it, a lot of them never even rooted for the Mets growing up, and nor should they root for the Mets now. But there's that connection to the franchise and the understanding of the history. But you have to put that aside. And it makes you wonder if the Cohens need to do that too. Now, I know part of their recruitment and part of what makes this place different is the family aspect, the access to Cohen's network of wealth. That is a big difference. Their recruitment, which has worked and has not worked. I mean, it worked with some. It didn't work with others. It didn't work with Kyle Tucker. Worked with Bo Bichette. So that's a comment that you have to listen to and understand and know that that's where this deal is going now. This is Stearns' team. So all this pining for yesterday and the thought that the fans have a say in roster management, you got to put that aside. You are a stakeholder in this. No doubt about it. Your money is what fuels this whole thing. You're not happy that Alonso Diaz and Nimmo are not here. Just don't watch the games. Don't subscribe to MLB Network. Don't engage in this until you are satisfied that a team or a product that is meeting whatever needs that you have is worth your money. You do that, message will be sent. I think winning will do that. And I think if the Mets are in a wild card spot or battling for a division, or these young players, some of them who are really exciting, are starting to turn the corner, you will forget about that before you have to pay your federal taxes. And that's not too far away. Believe me, you will forget about that. Breaking up is hard to do, is the old saying, right? And as sports fans, you develop these emotional connections to players who you don't know, who don't know you, because they're in your television, your radio, you're conscious now with the hot stove. Every second of every, maybe day, We talk about, we debate, we look at their numbers. They develop personalities. Pete was a big goofball. He did incredibly good work for pets and animals and shelter pets. I admired that. And that, to me, was one of the reasons why I liked him. I liked him because he hit 40 home runs and drove in 120 runs. But I really liked that part. I admired that. It was something special to me. I thought it was cool. I always, you know, loved those shelter pet, you know, banners that used to come across when he would donate for his home runs. I hope he does that in Baltimore. But at the same time, I want to win. I want to see the Mets win. I want to talk about a fun team, a competitive team. And if Noah Alonso on a 5-year deal makes that happen, then so be it. So that's it. We're not talking about this anymore. That's it. Now, I think the part that does play into this, and I think this is really important, and I think the Mets, with the kind of depth they're signing with veteran free agents, with the not only the prospects on the top 30, but you get a chance to see an arm like a Brett Banks yesterday against the Yankees throwing up heat. I think there's a number of interesting arms in this organization that aren't even being talked about. I think the only person talking about it is our buddy Ernie Dove, who's down in Port St. Lucie. And if you're not following him, give him a follow. He's doing great work. And I'm going to try to get him back on before spring training is out because I really want to hear what's going on down there. But I think the Mets have a lot of interesting things going on. I think Justin Willard is going to be an interesting coach and voice in this organization, hopefully one that has a positive impact on the pitchers. It is so important what's going on right now with the development and the prospect, not just because you want to see what kind of pieces develop that you could possibly trade for reinforcements as you make your run for a postseason division championship, but also how you could bring in cost-controlled talent into the organization. And no better example was, look at the lineup out down in Fort Lauderdale when they played the Yankees yesterday. Carson Benj is in it. Nick Morabito got some time. Jacob Reimer got some time. Ryan Clifford got some time. Right off the bat, you had Brett Banks I talked about. And there was a number of other young arms that were up and down in that game. And then I read earlier in the week, and, you know, I don't want to turn too much of this spring into every time there's a lockout strike rhetoric. I don't want to turn it into that. But you read about owners being united with a war chest of about $75 million a team, $2 billion, to really stand up to the Players Association, to do what they couldn't accomplish in 1994 and break the union, institute a salary cap, which they say will help competitive balance, and basically win a war. And you see here Chris Bassett, former Met, union representative, say, we're never going to do that. We're never going to allow a salary cap, and points out accurately how baseball, and I think this has been underreported, has more competitive balance than the NFL and the NBA. And he's right. I mean, if you look at the NFL champions over the last 10, 15 years, it's been a handful of teams. The NBA historically has been a league that has seen dynasties run for 6, 8, 9, 10 years. And that's changing a little bit because of some of the instances where the cap has come into play with the first apron and the second apron and the restriction of transactions. And I think that there is going to be some level of that. I think the owners putting out there that their valuations of their franchises are not quite where they need to be because of the lack of competitive balance, or more appropriately, the television contracts they can't get in their markets. That's the real rub. And I think they said the quiet part out loud. I think you got a number of owners in this sport that want out, want to get a maximum valuation for their franchise. Winning doesn't necessarily do that, which I disagree, because I think winning builds interest. Interest builds the need for more media and more television and so on and so forth. And their main goal is, hey, I'll burn this sport down to get what I want. I put all the time in, I put all the money in, I put all my wealth in, and I don't care what happens. There is no world where 2 years of no baseball, which some people are talking about holding the line, and I hope Rob Manfred and some of the common sense owners, whether that be Steve Cohen or others, I don't know who it is, and Steve even talked about how he's a pro league when it comes to contract negotiations for a new deal with both sides. And he's right. It should be pro league. There should be something that grows the league, because without the league, there's no teams, there's no valuations. Without the league, the players could go play anywhere else. Does it matter? Do you want to play in Korea? Do you want to play in Japan? You want to start your own barnstorm league? The NBA tried that back in 1999. What are you watching today? You're watching the Knicks. You're watching the Celtics. You're watching the Lakers. You're not watching some copy or facsimile of that. So there's a lot there. And I've talked about it. I'm not going to repeat myself. But in an era where there is more wealth envy and ignorance about economics than ever before, and couple that with a lot of things people could do at any moment in time, you know, people stuck in a snowstorm the last day or so, they're on their phones doing all sorts of stuff. They may not be necessarily watching the Mets Yankees on the MLB Network play a meaningless spring training game. If we were in the early 80s, or mid 80s, or late 80s, that game would probably draw tons of eyeballs if it was available on Channel 9, Channel 11, whatever, because that would be one of 12 channels or a handful of cable sports channels that you could watch. Now, you know, people are running around getting excited about 2 feet of snow being down so they could go on social media with a ruler and show you how many inches they got in front of their house. Talk about annoying. I'll tell you what. Everything about this winter has been annoying from a standpoint of weather. But here's the point. I think the point is that you really have to start to think, if you're the Mets and David Stearns, and I don't know if Cohen was 100% being truthful when he said that some of the moves they made this offseason were not connected to the salary, a potential salary cap or the lockout. But think about this. You just got to go to Cotts contracts. Whether it's 100% accurate or right, that's a whole different conversation. If the owners are successful in any kind of salary cap, and if it means a cap, doesn't mean you can't spend above it. I'm telling you, this is where this is going. Mark my words, they're looking at the NBA and they're saying to themselves, we're going to position this as, hey, you want to spend more and you want to go above the cap and you want to pay a luxury tax, but on top of that, you're going to have restrictions of roster movement. Whether that means you can only make so many trades, you can only sign so many free agents, you can only sign so many types of free agents, you might not be able to make certain types of trades. There's all sorts of different things that they could implement, similar to what the NBA does. And if you want me to sit here and explain the NBA salary cap, look, that's Bobby Marks. He does a great job over at ESPN. One of the things about independent media and the barriers of entry being brought down because of technology and whatnot is that you could have intelligent conversations that in the past there was a wall that you had to go to a beat writer or into a national writer. You would never get access to that. You would have to rely on them. Now you could pretty much look up anything yourself. The NBA salary cap is one of those that you better buckle up because it's complicated. But so keep that in mind. Forget about burning the house down. Forget about these owners. I mean, Audie Moreno said the quiet part out loud. Winning's not in his top five. This is a business investment, an expensive toy, and there are guys that want out. The game has changed a lot from just 15 years ago. This is not a sport that you could get in as a wealthy business owner who, like Bud Selig, sold used cars, get in at a good price, hang in there, be competitive, and sell it for generational wealth. It's just not like that anymore. You need to have serious high-level equity money. There's only a handful of people that really could buy these teams. And look, you could have a front man like the fake ownership that Derek Jeter did. You want to do that. They want to buy in, be the front person, have some say, controlling interest in how the roster is moved and whatnot. You could do that. Wasn't all his money. Even with A-Rod in the NBA and all that stuff, not all his money. You just don't have that kind of money anymore. And the one thing they're not talking about, and I do think that this plays into the competitive balance piece, is even though you've had a number of champions and you have this tournament that I don't care if you win 82 games, if you have the right pitcher, you get hot in these wild card series, these division series, you could go to the World Series. So being 6 of 30, there is a shot for all. I think the Pittsburgh Pirates, with some of their pitching, have a good shot of having a good year. If the Pirates get into the postseason, into the tournament, they have a chance of making some noise when you have Paul Skene starting. I mean, you just do. Like, so this idea there's no competitive balance, that's false. Now, the feeling that you can actually get into that tournament, that you have the resources to overcome every single mistake, the available cash, and I think that's the real key. Anytime I see someone say, well, this owner's worth $4 billion, it doesn't matter how much they're worth. It doesn't. What matters is what revenue they have coming into that business unit and how much available cash they have after all their expenses they have, including payroll and other things, like running that ballpark that they have. Now, I understand taxes and losses and all the different things that come with playing accounting games. But the bottom line is, in order to pay your bills, you need to have cash. That's never going to change. And just because you're worth X doesn't mean all of that is cash. That doesn't mean it's actually all for the business. And it doesn't mean they want to spend it. Now, if you don't have a profitable business model, you should sell the team. I think what a lot of these guys are saying is they can't. Now, if they succeed, and I think that it'd be a foolhardy thing for any of us after this year to think that there won't be some kind of penalty on teams at the higher tier to build their rosters, whether it be a cap that is not a salary cap but is a basically instructions to limit transactions or take draft picks away or whatever. If you don't think that's going to come out of this, then you're not paying attention. There's a sport where there's enough owners that do not feel that they could compete. They feel the way the Dodgers have doubled and tripled down on building a sustainable winning franchise and then leveraging that power to the nth degree. That has awoken the Wolves. And Cohen coming in and doing what he's done has been like the 1-2 punch. If you don't think that that's going to lead to some kind of roster challenges for teams like the Mets and the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Phillies, you're not paying attention. Now, you want to say they're just going to pocket the money? Look, I don't have their books, and maybe that's true. I think I looked at this up, and I don't know how accurate this is. I looked it up online. I think baseball players gets between 44 to 46% of the revenues, whereas NBA players get 50 to 51%. That's not acceptable. I believe the product should get the majority of the revenue pool. If you look at the NBA, they have a revenue pool and they share in it. And you know, I'd be really curious, because you don't have the books open, if baseball will do that. I think there's all going to be sorts of political theater on this. Why the politicians, don't be surprised if their status as a sport that, you know, is basically violating antitrust rules is threatened. We talked about that last week. But here's where it comes into the Mets, and here's where it comes into Cohen, and here's where it comes in, and the bow gets tied up here on this State of the Union when it comes to what the Mets did this winter and how important development is going to be if you still want to use Cohen's largesse and, at this point, maintain a competitive team in an environment where I don't think you could go out and sign Bo Bichette for $40 million because you need a third baseman. In an environment where the Dodgers can't just get themselves a closer because they want to just stack as much probabilistic success in their favor. There's reports that a salary cap, let's just call it a cap, or whatever you want to call it, an apron like they do in the NBA or whatever, between $260 and $280 million is kind of where they're looking to be. And they'll allow teams to be grandfathered in and be able to find a way to get down over a period of time. And then the floor will be somewhere around $160 million. So if you just look at the Mets' expenditures on payroll, which does not include any arbitration payouts, this is just contracts on the books. Right now they're at $355-ish million on payroll this year. Next year, with free agents off the books and not a single dime of arbitration-eligible players getting any kind of salary, they're already at $254 million. 2028, they're at $170 million. And then they go on in 29 and 30, they're below $100 million. So they're in pretty good shape. If you look at where Alonso was going to be, because if you look at, you know, because the only two players in 29 and 30, which is where Alonso's five-year deal would have went, where a Diaz five-year deal would have went, where Nimmo's contract would have went, potentially. The only two players you have absolutely on the salary books that you have to keep, that you can't just say, hey, we're going to blow the whole thing up and let everybody walk away, is Lindor and Soto. And Soto's salary in 2030 actually goes down. Right now, Lindor and Soto make about $93 million. So think about that. Look at that. They're about a third, almost. Two players. Two top 10 players in the sport, mind you. They're about a third of a suggested salary cap that you're faced with potentially as early as next year. And it'd be interesting, and again, this is way cart before the horse, but if you have a bunch of teams that have to get to $160 million, do you go and you shed a Marcus Simeon in a trade? Do you shed a Sean Manai in a trade? How do you do that? It's going to be wild because teams above the cap are going to be shedding payroll and maybe just gifting good players, maybe for prospects, maybe just to say, hey, take the salary because you need to be able to get down. It's going to be almost the opposite effect. And the only way a team like the Mets are going to be competitive is that early year, low cost players are going to have to be part of that. Now, who knows how that's going to play in to this whole new world? They may reduce, they may start arbitration clocks much sooner, maybe after a certain amount of service time, not 3 years, maybe after a year or two. Or maybe they get rid of the arbitration process as part of that, make players make more money earlier. What I think they're going to find out is, and I don't think the Players Association is going to do that. The Players Association and those that run it, the players that are actually on the committee, they're more concerned about keeping the veterans and the high-paid portion of their constituency whole. I don't think they're as concerned as the guys who are 4A, minor leaguers, kids coming up. They want them to do, until it changes, and those guys are in control, the kids that are coming up, they're not going to want them to make big money early. I just don't see that. I think the owners might give some trade-offs on that, or that might be their idea. But let's assume you have some sort of penalty at $280 million or $300 or so that makes it difficult to build your roster. Well, now, okay, Ryan Clifford and what he does this spring becomes a bigger deal. And Carson Bench and Jonah Tong and Christian Scott and Nolan McClain, Jack Winiger, Will Watson. I'll just keep going on and on and on here. Jonathan Santucci. I'm just throwing names out there. And all these little arms that you see in Fort Lauderdale yesterday throwing heat. At some point, you want to build a bullpen? You probably can't go out and get Luke Weaver for $10 million a year and maintain some kind of competitiveness with the payroll restriction. What I know in the NBA, which you've seen, is that these aprons have really hurt tweener veterans, veterans that are like good bench players, good guys to have on the team, but you just can't afford to keep them on the roster, and they're not going to sit at the end of the bench and not get paid their fair share. So what are they going to do? They're going to go to Europe or something like that, China, places like that. And they, you know, and then eventually, if they do what they got to do, they find their way back. But I mean, you look at the Knicks, perfect example. They've had all these draft picks sitting at the end of the bench. It actually has hurt them with building a bench because they have so much money tied up in their core starters. And if Jalen Brunson didn't take a pay cut, it would be even worse. I mean, that's the whole thing. These guys wind up, and look, no one's crying for anyone making $30, $40, $50 million a year. I'm not saying that, but In a world where your market value is X, that's the pie that's out there, you shouldn't have to do those things, right? So I think that when you really tie it all together here, yeah, you got to move on because it's important to move on when it comes to these players. But I also think an eye towards the future, and that's where a president of baseball operations and a good team run, a good, well-run team, and a team run by an owner that looks at things from a 3D perspective, not just what's in front of his nose, like a lot of what the fans do. Look, most fans are not worried about 2030. Just like if I told you in 2001, trade David Wright, this kid they just drafted, and I'll give you whatever the star that's available in 2001 to complement the Mets roster to make a championship run, 10 out of 10 fans would do it. Today, maybe they'd be like, eh, you know, because they have more education and knowledge. if I told you the Mets' number one draft pick from 2080, if I give him to you now, if I take it and I trade it for Paul Skeens, would you do it? Of course you would. Now, in 2080, and I'll probably not be around, but in 2080, after we're all gone, those fans say, what were they thinking? They just traded a Hall of Famer. They just gave away a Hall of Famer. And I know I'm getting goofy here on you, but, you know, that's the point. So I think that you have to start looking at what the Mets are doing from multidimensional aspects, not just competing this year from how they're going to run the organization. And as far as the noise, the media following Alonso around, and they'll probably do the same thing with Diaz when games start out in Arizona. You'll get all these updates. It'll be on X mainly. Just ignore it. And let's not get carried away a couple of days in the spring training about a ground ball, a video of Bo Bichette flubbing a ground ball. I saw the ground ball on Saturday with Bichette throw to first. Wasn't a great throw. Should have been handled. And look, I laugh about people freaking out about Bo Bichette at third base when the Mets went to the NLCS with Mark Vientos playing third base. Yeah, I know Iglesias came in as a defensive replacement, but Mark Vientos playing third base. Let's be fair. And they act like the Mets are the only team that wanted to try Bo Bichette at third base. That was where the Phillies were going to put him if they signed him. So it's funny now, this is a problem. So you can't get caught up on all this. I think the bigger thing, and I think one of the more interesting conversations about this franchise from a long-term perspective, not for 2026, is what happens on the backfields, what happens on the minor league fields, what happens in these games that you just saw this past weekend. In another week to 10 days, you're going to start to see the regulars more and more, and the Jacob Reimers and the Ryan Cliffords are going to go to minor league camp. They're just, you know, with sports health and science and medicine coming into play here, there's no need to, in a sport where you could be running out here every day until November, to worry about playing big innings on February 23rd in Fort Lauderdale because it's a Mets-Yankees matchup in the Grapefruit League. Nobody needs to win the Grapefruit League championship. Nobody needs to worry about the Grapefruit League records. Nobody needs to worry about the Grapefruit League World Series. They don't need to worry about that. That's not the way it goes. So, some thoughts for you on this snowy Monday. Hopefully, this is it. The good weather, the warm weather, the spring weather, baseball can't come soon enough. The cold of winter, the depression of the grayness of winter, the kind of like being stuck at home has some merit because then you come and listen to things like this. But you know, that's that. So what's next? Continue to send me mailbag questions. I'll get back to the mailbag next week. I'm going to try to get you a nice guest next week, live from Port St. Lucie, get real feel of what's going on in Port St. Lucie, because now at that point, at this time next week, we'll have a bit of information, a bit of action happening, not just workouts and what have you. And, stay tuned, continue to go to Extra Innings. Got some interesting things I'll bring up and write about. We're trying to do 3 to 4 interesting premium content, either video or written pieces a week to kind of keep you engaged in between shows. Of course, there's always emergency shows when there's drama or big news. And that's the best part. The fact that I struggled to come up, and I think we had a good conversation today, and not just one that I pulled out of my you-know-what. I think it was really as I listened to Cohen, as I listened and watched what was going on with the labor conversation, I think that tying that in with what transpired this past offseason with the veterans, I think that it's pertinent. And I think that that's something that I wanted you to chew on as we continue together to assess this team, live the daily journey, and figure out ways to continue to both deep down, me cover and root, and you root for a championship or hopefully a contending ball club. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at the Talking Mets Podcast.com. Talking Mets Podcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G. And on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And as I always tell you, come to the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com, premium content, interactions with the show, updates on the show, all in one stop, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your week. Stay warm. Go shovel some snow. warm weather in baseball is in Florida, but it'll be here in New York soon. Till then, take care, everybody.